organ donations, much in the news as state legislators consider presumed consent and physicians consider whether it should be part of advanced care planning. Terry Rozelle, the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics, provides some insight in this edition of the Bioethics Channel. The Bioethics Channel is a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Terry, New York, California, addressing the shortage of organ donations in different ways, trying to bridge the gap between the number of available organs and the 100,000 patients on the waiting list nationwide in the U.S. Is a state legislature the appropriate venue for a discussion like this to take place? Does it make you squirm a little bit?
It doesn't make me squirm that the states are addressing these issues. Certain proposals that might come up in various states could be of that sort. Though I'm not squirming a whole lot, I'm mostly interested in what is being proposed in New York, in California. There are apt to be additional proposals in other states because, in fact, the number of persons who are on the wait list is 100,000 plus and just keeps growing and growing, whereas the number of organs available, especially kidneys, for those who might benefit from an organ transplant are not growing at the same pace.
In New York, they're proposing presumed consent, essentially making everyone a donor unless they actively opt out. What ethical issues present themselves to you anyway in presumed consent?
Assemblyman Brodsky, who has an 18-year-old daughter who is a two-time recipient of a kidney, became concerned about the relative lack of organs for those who are on the wait list and who could benefit, like his daughter has done. And so he's proposed that when you go to get a driver's license in New York State, if you do not check a box that says you opt out of organ donation or organ recovery, I guess
right.
It would be, then it would be presumed that you are amongst the majority of persons in the U.S. who say that they would become a donor. And so that is an interesting approach. One question I have just procedurally that has not been answered in the research I've done to date is what about those who don't get a driver's license in the state of New York? How would they register their opt-out if they wish to do so? And I don't know how they have addressed that, if they have. Ethical issues that are raised by this start with the sense that a lot of people have that this is a presumption is contrary to American values of individualism. That's an is, not an ought. One could argue that we're too individualistic and we ought to be a lot more about solidarity, we're in it together sort of thing. But that's not what America was built on, and it's not where we're at currently, according to polls and for lack of legislation to date that would reflect a more solidarity approach to organ donation.
Right to privacy is part of that, part of your concern?
We are big on privacy in the U.S., much more so than some other parts of the world. And within the U.S., too, there are different valuations amongst ethnic groups. And frankly, where I come from in rural Minnesota, privacy matters less than it does perhaps in New York City. But privacy is a high value, and generally it's written into law and state laws as well. There's a concern that that especially family, was it privacy or family rights to decide what happens to their loved one's body might be violated, that individuals' right to privacy might be violated if they don't find opportunity to opt out of the system. may be that those who are less literate in English, who don't get a driver's license, who are on the margins of society, might have their privacy rights violated just because they are not in the flow of the majority.
Now, presumed consent is it working in Europe? It seems like that is the case in Europe, where a number of countries have gone that route.
Particularly Belgium has apparently doubled its rate of recovery once they instituted a presumed consent law and process. And there are other, especially Northern European nations, that have been doing this with relative success. One of the things that would probably have to happen here also is that the laws that do exist now, which state that if I opt in as an organ donor intended, my next of kin cannot overrule that once I'm dead. Virtually every state has passed legislation to that with that intent, and virtually no organ procurement organization would follow that if the next of kin protested. And so if presumed consent laws were put in place, it would also have to have read in, as the New York legislation does, that next of kin cannot override, and that there would have to be a willingness to follow that.
And that's a whole nother issue, isn't it?
So why don't we do that? There's, yeah, again, another evaluation, expression of valuation, even against the law, which says we value the rights of family to make decisions about their destiny.
Now, moving to another aspect of this, an ethics forum in American Medical News suggests that primary care physicians should advocate for living organ donations as part of the advanced care planning process. Now, you have written in a blog that we're going to be posting shortly that this introduces some bias into that equation, that it might be a biased proposition. What do you say about that?
Actually, what I wrote was that the bias exists within transplant programs already. It's acknowledged, recognized. No one is hiding that fact. The bias is natural. It's inherent. If you are a transplant program, you are aimed at benefiting your patients who have need of an organ. And so at Vanderbilt, for example, when I was doing my PhD work there and a fellow in the transplant center, I was an ethics consultant for the kidney transplant program and the heart and lung transplant programs. And the reason that they had ethics consultants available was to be available especially to living donors, to assess their motivations and to help them think through, should they do this, ought they do this, and the recipients as well. And I did that, had opportunity to talk with potential donors and potential recipients. And the reason they would have an ethicist on staff is I would come as a relative outsider who is less biased toward the potential recipient and perhaps even more biased towards the potential donor, but at least somewhat neutral. And that sort of check and balance was thought to be valuable. So most transplant programs would not have that in place, wouldn't have an ethics consultant on staff. They would have ethics committees, but perhaps wouldn't utilize it unless there was a conflict.
And conflict and trying to mitigate any conflict of interest is what you described there, I would presume.
And that's what the ethics consult was intended to do. So this proposal then would introduce the primary care physician as someone who stands outside and could be the advocate for the interests of the donor, whereas it's presumed that the transplant program would be primarily interested in the interests of the recipient. In fact, they're interested in both because both become their patient. And at least in my limited experience, the transplanters and in their evaluation process are very attentive to risk for a living donor. But there is perceived and probably actual bias again towards the recipient, and therefore it might be a good idea for primary care providers to be actively involved in the evaluation process and to counsel with potential donors.
The demands, I'm thinking about this, the demands on primary care physicians are significant enough, and now you're introducing another factor, or someone is, at least in this particular ethics forum in American Medical News. It's just another layer of something to do, another layer of education that will be required.
So how realistic is it?
Yeah, exactly.
That this will happen? It may be not unrealistic that if I was considering a living donation, that I would ask my internist. But my concern would be that then primary care physicians would become better educated about donation, so that their potential bias, even against donation, wouldn't impede a process that could ultimately be good for everyone. There are benefits, psychological benefits, at least to those who donate, and the risks that also are on them physically are often outweighed by their altruistic intent, their desire to help extend or save someone's life, improve the quality of life, particularly if it's a family member, which is often the case, but even when it's not. And so we would want primary care physicians to be well versed in what donation entails, what the risks are and are not, and what the benefits are potentially as well.
Seems like we're really still struggling to find a balance here, certainly for parents or patients and families facing death if an organ isn't available, and for society potentially imposing a solution on those who may have very good reasons not to want to donate their organs. Where do we find the balance with this?
Ultimately, it'd be wonderful. We didn't have to negotiate a balance at all, and we were just able to create new organs from stem cells. And there's a lot of work being done on that. And I say, wouldn't that be wonderful? It would also introduce other interesting ethical dilemmas.
It would keep you employed.
That's a primary concern, yes. So that's not a total panacea, but it would certainly resolve some of these issues. In the meantime, what we have to do is have a lot of thoughtful conversation, dialogue, public dialogue. The worst thing that could happen right now, while we are dependent on donations, the, quote, gift of life, is that we don't violate the public trust or be perceived to do so. And so any new proposal like presumed consent or a registry of living donors, such as California is looking at, or any other proposal that is not currently being practiced, we have to be careful that we don't come across as untrustworthy, as pushing the envelope too far, such that values of Americans are not respected or even violated.
Terry Rozelle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.